good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear about an interfaith panel discussion that's happening in Denver this evening. Its aim is to wrestle with the bitter political, religious and cultural divisions that we're all dealing with, not just in the country, but right here in Colorado. After that, we'll hear about a series of performances that are taking place this week in Boulder. It's ahead of Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and it's aimed at highlighting the reality of day-to-day life for undocumented immigrants in our community. Then on Resistance Radio, we'll get a report from an event that took place in downtown Boulder this past Saturday. Every 11th day of every month at 11 a.m, a small group of interfaith community members gather to challenge other faith communities to raise the alarm about the urgency for climate action. On Saturday at January's event, members of Extinction Rebellion were along as well. We'll get that report. After headlines from the BBC and a commentary from Jim Hightower, it's Poco in Boco, people of colour in Boulder County. Then at 9 o'clock, we'll get media analysis from Counterspin, rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
Denver City Council member Candy Sitabaka is working to repeal the city's camping ban, which has been ruled unconstitutional by a lower court judge. Sitabaka told the Denver Post that she wanted to repeal the ban immediately after hearing of the county court judge's ruling, but she was unable to coordinate with the rest of the city council. On Thursday evening, Sitabaka's proposed repeal was briefly published online, but was quickly taken down. It showed a complete strikethrough of the anti-camping ban, which has been in effect since 2012. Voters rejected a repeal of the ban in May last year. News of Sitabaka's proposal spurred opposition efforts from local organizations. The Post obtained emails between a well-connected local consulting firm and the Apartment Association of Metro Denver. One email noted that there was reason for concern about the proposed repeal, noting the five new council members plus the uncertainty about how other members would vote. Mayor Michael Hancock said in a statement that he would veto any repeal of the camping ban. While the Denver police have not been enforcing it, authorities have conducted four large-scale cleanups last week targeting encampments with tents and makeshift shelters. All four were in Sitabaka's district. Recently, at a memorial service in Boulder for homeless people who died last year, the number of those deaths was put at 48. That statistic was three times the number from 2018 and was reported at the time that not all of the 48 died on the streets. The city's director of Housing and Human Services reported to the council last week that of those 48 people, 19 were housed at the time of their passing. Now there is urgency to understand the scope of the problem because the temporary city facility run by Bridge House is planned to be closed with a loss of 50 overnight shelter beds. The Daily Camera reports that Kurt Fimhaber, the housing director, has been working with the county coroner to get a better grasp on the city's toll. He added that the number of people who died last year while experiencing homelessness is not yet known. However, the annual coroner's report for last year will shed more light on the subject. Scott Medina, the director of Bridge House, said that the number of deaths which should be used is 48 compared to 16 for the year before. He added that it's important to honor people with a long history of homelessness who died while finally being in a housed situation. A bill that would allow state employees to engage in collective bargaining through a union may be introduced in the state legislature as early as today. The Denver Post reports that Colorado is one of 14 states where state workers can't negotiate pay and benefits. Last year, Governor Jared Polis opposed a similar measure, but now he is throwing his support behind the bill. At a press conference on Friday, Polis said that making sure state employees have what they need to succeed and do a great job is an important part of the state's obligation to taxpayers. He also said that last year he did not oppose the concept of the bill, only the details. However, neither Polis nor his staff would comment on the specific ways the current bill differs from last year's. But under the new bill, state workers would still not have the right to strike. Also at the legislature, a bill will be proposed that would prohibit using a handheld phone while driving. The measure would allow the use of hands-free equipment, but otherwise ban use of a mobile device. Also, drivers under 18 would be prohibited from using any mobile devices. Birds that are native to Boulder County are being supplanted by those that have better adapted to live alongside humans. The Daily Camera reports that several annual bird counts show that species such as crows, robins, and red-tailed hawks outcompete other native species and dissolve an ecosystem's biodiversity. The annual Audubon Society's Christmas Day bird count showed 107 species around Boulder, which is average compared to previous years, but there were some oddities. One birder spotted a Wilson's warbler for the first time in the count's history. The warbler would normally live along the southern coasts or in the tropics. And the lark bunting, Colorado state bird, went unseen for a sixth straight year. County ornithologists interpret the presence of some unusual species to be a sign of environmental degradation due to climate change, but mainly due to overdevelopment and urban sprawl leading to a loss of habitat. As rural areas are consumed by housing developments, oil and gas operations, agriculture and recreation, native species are being replaced. The lark bunting was the most common bird counted in the 1880s, but one nest for the species has not been identified in Boulder in half a dozen years. Meanwhile, the numbers of red-tailed hawks, which thrive in human-altered landscapes and prey upon native species, has doubled since 1990. Today it will be mostly sunny with a high near 45 and breezy, and sunny skies tomorrow and warmer with a high around 50. Right now it's about 22 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, this evening in Denver, the Interfaith Alliance is hosting a panel discussion of diverse and well-known local faith leaders. It'll feature Christians, a Jew, and a Muslim. And they're going to wrestle with the bitter political, religious, and cultural divisions that we seem to be dealing with, not just in the US, but right here in Colorado. I spoke with Reverend Michael Hidalgo. He's from the Denver Community Church. That's an evangelical congregation in Capitol Hill. And they're the ones who are hosting this evening's event.
Well, we recognize that our city, our state, our country seems to be plagued by bitter political and cultural division. And that division is often amplified not only by many of our elected officials, but also by some of our faith leaders. And we've seen this division in families and faith communities, in workplaces and friendships, and we're recognizing many people feel an irreparable split because we just seem to, as a culture, to be unable to have civil public conversations anymore. And so what we've recognized, the uniqueness of this division, is it's not just over one important conversation or over one issue. But we see this, for example, within the evangelical community who are split over our current sitting president. We see this in the United Methodist Church over the discussion regarding LGBTQ inclusion within the church. We see this within Jewish congregations split over how to best support the nation of Israel. And we're recognizing that while the issues causing the divisions are unique, the pain that the division is causing is the same, and that's why we're bringing people together to talk about the pain we're all experiencing in the midst of these divisions.
So I know you'll have several panelists, folks involved with the Interfaith Alliance of Colorado, people representing Christian congregations, Jewish communities, Muslim communities. But it sounds what you're talking about, it's that there's a lot of conflict within the communities themselves, not necessarily conflict between the different communities. Rather, a lot of the conflict is within their own communities.
Yes, and that's one of the things that being a part of an interfaith group and listening to one another has allowed us to see, is that these divisions are between congregations and even between families, between faith traditions, are unique. The divisions are between or around certain issues. But again, what we're finding is that the pain that the division causes, the pain that leads to friends ending their friendship, that leads to estrangement in families, that is what we found is the common denominator. That is what's the same. And we believe that if we come together and express lament, share that pain, that pain is something that can bring us together.
And are you seeing within any of these faith organizations, faith communities, efforts to heal those wounds and heal those divisions themselves? Are there any models that you've seen any congregations come up with that you think are helpful that could be replicated?
Yes, and that's part of what we're doing. The event is called Together in This, and so we'll have our evening on January 13 here at Denver Community Church at our Uptown location. And that time together will be a public event for all of us to come together and express lament. The following day at ILIF Seminary, we will get together to share best practices, to come together and discuss our profound differences, to talk about the conflicts we've experienced, and to continue to share our heartbreak over the division. But hopefully, this will really begin lending hope so that we can bring healing to our divides, that we can overcome vitriol, that we can tone down our rhetoric, that we can stop dehumanizing one another, and build a more cohesive public life. And we've seen these efforts not only here at Denver Community Church, but we've seen this with all of those who are partnered in this event, in this two-day event, from Denver Seminary to ILIF Seminary, from Interfaith Colorado, from the Colorado Muslim Society, from Better Angels, that there are many working on this effort together. And our hope is not only that we would bring hope to those who are a part of this, but that we would begin helping those who are fatigued by this division begin to see that not everybody is at each other's throats, but that we're actually continuing to learn and hopefully plant seeds for more civil discourse and just greater respect for one another moving forward.
And do you see these conversations happening at a leadership level in a lot of these faith organizations? Because what there has been in the past, certainly in certain more conservative faith communities, and if we look at maybe even the evangelical church, you mentioned there's division there amongst support, you know, people torn on as to whether or not to support Donald Trump. But traditionally, we have seen leadership in some of these more conservative churches stepping into a very obvious and very vocal political position that can often create the division. So at what point is it appropriate for church leadership to step into places? Because we've seen less vocal participation, say, in the public sphere when it comes to church leadership on issues, say, like climate change or poverty or social inequity. But we have a lot of vocal participation in the public sphere from certain church leadership on issues like same-sex marriage or reproductive rights.
Yeah, and one of the things that I know to be true is that oftentimes in our current cultural and political moment, the most divisive voices often gain the most coverage and the most attention. And what makes me disappointed, I'll say it that way, is that there are faith leaders who are very vocal about things like you just mentioned, for example, like climate change. There are faith communities around the country speaking out and against racial inequity. And there are people who, like our congregation, who have continually expressed our support for and our inclusion of the LGBTQ community and continue to work toward greater equity and equality for our LGBTQ friends, not only within our own faith community, but also at the civic level. And so often what we find is that when we invite people to the table to have these discussions about these pressing issues, if we're not doing it in a way that is inflammatory or divisive, oftentimes that gets less attention. And so part of our hope, as I said, with this, with our event called Together in This, is that we would begin to even change the narrative publicly, that people would realize there are many, many people doing really great work and doing it with a lot of enthusiasm and doing it across real political and religious difference so that we can be those who begin to bring the healing that we all need, recognizing that a healthy society and a healthy democracy and healthy people depend on all of us first seeking to understand, to discuss respectfully, and hopefully find common ground for the common good in our city, in our country, and in our world.
That's Reverend Michael Hidalgo from the Denver Community Church, an evangelical congregation in Capitol Hill in Denver. This evening, they're hosting an interfaith discussion on wrestling with bitter political, religious and cultural divisions that we're dealing with here in the US. And that event starts at 5:30. You can find out more on our Resistance Radio calendar. Just go to news.kgnu.org and click on Resistance Radio. Well, every evening this week, Shoebox Stories Live happens at the Dairy Arts Centre in Boulder. Shoebox Stories is a podcast that was created by Motus Theatre to share the stories of undocumented immigrants in our community. Well, this week, five different Boulder County organisations will be stepping into the shoes of the undocu-monologists by reading their personal stories aloud on stage, and then there'll be a question and answers. Well, this evening, high school students, members of YOAB, that's Youth Opportunity Advisory Board, will be reading the monologues. I spoke with Kiara Chavez. She's going to have her monologue read this evening by Riango Reyes of YOAB.
This time we're having the monologues be centered around community members standing into our shoes. And so, kind of like the podcast series that we're doing, we are asking community members from our own Boulder community to read our stories out loud and kind of feel the weight of our stories through reading our words, through feeling the impact as you do with reading out loud, and then reflecting on it on stage, telling us what that experience was like, whether they have known about undocumented stories before or never heard of it, and kind of letting people know what it was like to read our stories and then present it to an audience, I suppose.
Well, let's give our listeners a sample or taste of what they can expect if they come along to some of the Shoebox Live performances happening starting on Monday, and it runs through. There are several opportunities to come and see.
The longest plane ride of my life was for my trip to Mexico when I was 19. So about 2 years ago now. I don't remember packing. I don't remember the drive to the airport. I don't even remember much about all the forms I had to fill out, or how much my family had to pay to apply for advanced parole, the program that used to allow DACA recipients to leave the country for study abroad, employment, or, as in my case, a humanitarian reason like taking care of my grandma post-surgery. I don't even remember much about the conversation with my worried parents about the dangers of me traveling. You see, although advance parole granted me permission from the U.S. government to lawfully leave the country, it didn't actually guarantee I would be let back in. Spoiler alert, I made it back. What I remember most is being on the plane, because I'll never forget how my heartbeat beat faster the closer we got to taking off. The plane was going to Puerto Vallarta. I'm actually from Colima. But they don't have a direct flight from Denver, and this is one of the closest airports. So you can imagine, I was surrounded by American tourists ready for vacation. Meanwhile, I sat there just about vibrating from nervousness or excitement. I'm not sure which. Either way, I just wanted to vomit. But luckily from the tourists on that flight, the knot run in my throat kept holding it down. Other people on the plane were chatting, making last-minute calls, getting out their reading material, and I was having a complete nervous breakdown. My hands sweating, my breathing was fast, my whole body was shaking. When I finally heard the pilot say we were heading out, and the plane began to move, my mind started racing. I couldn't stop thinking about what my life had consisted of the past 15 years since I crossed the border at age 4 and left my first home. All the nights as a child crying in my parents' arms asking, why can't I go back and see my family? Why, Mama? Why?
Kiara, that's your story. You've been on KGNU before reading that, but this time you're hearing somebody else read your words, and it's so personal. There's so much in that. What's that like for you, having somebody else read your story?
Yeah. Thank you, by the way. Mm-hmm. because it is so personal, and such a vulnerable part of who I am. It tugs at my heart to hear my story be told by somebody else. Because it just makes me a little nervous. Like, that's such a deep part of who I am. In somebody else's mouth. I don't know. But I definitely just, I have a lot of respect for you for being willing to step into my shoes and the shoes of other undocumented people, because those stories aren't heard by a lot of people, and very often not the feelings underlying behind that, our identity, aren't evident. And so I think that at least by reading our stories, you get a little glimpse of those feelings, which are so deep. And but I still, while hearing it, thought there's so many little phrases in there that I can understand wholly, but I wonder if people are getting the full picture of what those small moments meant in my life.
I mean, it was monumental, that experience, having been denied it, and especially to be able to watch your sister go back, and the injustice of just the happenstance of where you happen to be, where your parents happen to be when your time comes to be born, that can just change the path of your life.
Yeah.
What was the experience like for you to read that story?
I think it was like another person's point of view, and also like an insight as to how my father, who is also undocumented, felt being here without being able to come back to see us because he had to stay and work.
Well, people can find out more about this series of Shoebox Stories Live that is happening all this week, every evening at the Dairy Arts Centre. This evening, we heard there from Rangor Reyes. He's with YOAB, Youth Opportunity Advisory Board, one of the organisations participating. And he'll be reading this evening Chiara Chavez's monologue. Some of the other groups that are participating this week include the League of Women Voters of Boulder County, Centre for the American West, and the Boulder Chamber. And you can find out more at motustheatre.org, and it's part of their Shoebox Stories Live series. It is 8:26, and it's time now for Resistance Radio. Well, every 11th day of every month, a small group of interfaith community members gather to challenge faith communities to raise the alarm about the urgency for climate action. This past Saturday was the 11th of January, and local faith groups were joined by members of Extinction Rebellion in downtown Boulder. KGNU's Rosanna Longo was there and brings us this report.
Hi, my name is Sam Randall, and I'm here because I love the planet, and it's time. We need to be rallying everyone and all energies to come together and take care of the Earth so that it can be here.
Would you explain what will happen at 11?
Yeah, so at 11 o'clock every month, we've been gathering with the 11th Hour Calling Group at 11 o'clock on the 11th day to ring the bells and raise attention and raise awareness. So today is our first bigger action combined with Extinction Rebellion. So from 11 o'clock to 11:11, there will be bell ringing. The United Methodist Church, the Shambhala community, several other churches in the Boulder area have been involved, and there'll be bells ringing, and we'll be ringing here, and many of us are also sitting and just bearing witness and representing our love for the Earth.
My name is Michael Denslow. I'm a member of Extinction Rebellion. We are a nonviolent rebellion against the U.S. government for its criminal inaction on the climate crisis and the wider ecological disaster. We have a shared set of principles for growth, health, action, and results. We have four demands. Our demands are, number one, the government tell the truth about the climate and wider ecological emergency. Number two, government, and the governor for that matter, must enact legally binding policies to reduce carbon emissions to net zero by 2025. We do not trust our government to take the bold, swift, and long-term changes necessary to achieve these changes, and we do not intend to hand further power to our politicians. We demand a citizens' assembly to oversee the changes as we rise from the wreckage, creating a democracy fit for purpose. We demand a just transition that prioritizes the most vulnerable people affected by the climate crisis. We also have 10 principles. I'll just outline a few of them here in the interest of time. We are strictly nonviolent network, using nonviolent strategy and tactics as the most effective way to bring about change. We avoid blaming and shaming. We live in a toxic system. No one individual is to blame. We welcome everyone and every part of everyone. We are working actively to create a safer and more accessible spaces. If you agree to these demands and principles, you can act in our name, the name of Extinction Rebellion. I'd also like to point out the Red Rebel Brigade is approaching, coming down to join us.
No. 11th Hour Calling represents an effort to build community across faith traditions with the common goal of standing for Earth stewardship. We call for healing. We call for the Spirit's role of guarding and protecting and restoring balance to our natural world.
My name is Gary, and Gary McGrame, and I'm here to try to help spread awareness of the dire need for change. You know, this is a new time that people have got to wake up in order to save our planet before it's too late. And I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for KGNU, Rosanna Longo.
Thank you.
Some of the voices from Saturday's 11th hour event that took place in downtown Boulder. It happens on the 11th day of every month at 11 a.m. Thanks to Rosanna Longo for that report, and we'll put photographs online at news.kgnu.org.